Welcome to Supernormalized. I'm your host, CJ Barnaby, and I like to challenge what's considered normal and invite people just like you to share your story, wisdom, and truth. Each week, I explore deep healing modalities, supernatural abilities, spiritual contact, and the often unexplained whilst leaning into acceptance, personal growth, and real healing. If you're ready to step into a world where your story matters, you're in the right place. Enjoy finally being supernormalized. Today on Supernormalize, we dive into the extraordinary journey of Deanna Mara Devine, a soul guide, galactic shaman, and quantum energy activator who doesn't just teach quantum creation, she embodies it. With 25 years of deep spiritual awakening marked by what she calls her scorpion years, Deanna's transformation led to a powerful Phoenix Rising event that rewired her reality and her soul. She blends shamanism, sound healing, cosmic channeling, and source light language into personalized transformative experiences. We'll explore her upcoming book, Mastering Quantum Creation, Awakening the Phoenix Within, Manifesting Your Reality and Reclaiming Your Cosmic Power, and also her new Quantum Ancient Codes Oracle deck, plus her innovative work at the Source Language Institute. Deanna's unique fusion of ancient wisdom and quantum science offers both profound insights and practical tools for anyone ready to reclaim their cosmic power and to step into multidimensional leadership. I want you to get ready for a conversation that is part teaching, part activation, and entirely inspiring. Stay tuned to the end, and you'll actually get to have an experience of an activation with light language, which is profound. Now, I do warn people, because this actually is one of those situations where puts you into a deeper state of being. Once that part comes on, if you're driving, just skip over it. You can actually go back to it later. But otherwise, you have the chance to sit with it. It's beautiful. So wait for that. And I'm sure you'll enjoy this show. I really enjoyed the conversation with Deanna and her understanding of so many aspects of greater or more expansive reality. So if that's your jam, on with the show. Welcome to Supernormalized, Deanna Devine. Deanna, you've had a massive transformation in your life, which actually opened you up to new ways of seeing the world. And in doing so, that enabled you to help other people to transcend their limitations themselves. So welcome to the show. I'm eager to hear your story.
Thank you so much, CJ, for having me on. And I would love to share with the audience.
Excellent. I'm curious to know, because you actually mentioned that you had some scorpion years way back when. What were they like for you, and how did they pave the way for your Phoenix Rising?
Thank you for asking. Yeah, I have my book published now, and I literally decided to put that in the subtitle, Awaken the Phoenix Within. And that's my first chapter, from scorpion to eagle to the phoenix. So in the shamanic traditions, they talk about phases of transformation, and they talk about the scorpion is where kind of you start on the bottom. You know, the scorpion is usually on the bottom of the ocean in like the darker, denser parts. And then the eagle is the one that's able to fly higher and see the perspective of the situation to kind of get out of the murky water, right? And starts kind of elevating and get in the bigger perspective. And the phoenix is, as you know, that type of very powerful, transformative spirit that goes through the ashes and resurrects itself. So there's this resurrection process where a new version of ourselves gets created. So in my first chapter, I talk about my journey, and my journey in my teenage years that allowed me to come to where I am today, which is the phoenix. So I really feel that symbology for myself. I lived in Soviet Union, and then later in my years during Gulf War and the first bus bombing in Israel. So I've seen a lot of death. You know, it was just part of kind of my teenage years where it almost became like normalized, where, you know, if you have missiles flying over your head and you go to school with gas masks, and then this, you know, unexpected situations where, you know, you stand on the bus stop and then you hear a voice, and then a voice tells you to cross the street, and you like I wasn't as connected in my teenage years. Like some people are born with it. I think I'd always had it. I was always very old soul, but I didn't fully know what it was. And and this voice just told me to leave the area. And as we turned around the corner, the whole bus stop exploded. And this was the first bus bombing in Israel, if you can imagine. Like later, that became a norm too, right? But this is 1994. So in this little town, and this is when back in the days, you know, in the politics of the different organizations and it's interesting, you know, I love living in the Middle East because I think it's such a beautiful place. And yes, there's a lot of polarization in the area, unfortunately, due to history, due to, you know, World War One and World War Two, and how the land was given to the Jews. And I come from a family, you know, that lost relatives, my great-grandmother, to Holocaust. So from one perspective, I think it was the right thing for Jews to have land, but it created these bigger issues. And I think when it comes to land and territory and us learning how to be together. And so I think I learned a lot through those years of understanding these perspectives, but also it got so difficult that I wanted to leave. And so when I was 15 years old, I actually came to United States to visit my grandparents, and I asked to stay. And that's where I kind of started stepping into what I call the eagle years. Because when you're here and you're away from the land, it's just a very different perspective. You're able to learn about the conflict from, you know, in college with another Palestinian friend and really get like more academic view of it. And I think in general, when we're not in the region, we don't get sucked into the push and pull energies, right, of what this world is today, it's easier for us to understand. And that's what we have to discern. I think with everything happening in the world today, we really have to learn discernment. Like, are we getting sucked into me versus you, or are we in this unified field of understanding the bigger picture and the information? And later in my years, we can talk about it, my shamanic path. That's when I think I stepped into my phoenix, really being comfortable with death and rebirth. and really understanding that this is part of a process. Like, dying is normal. And we die in ceremonies, we die through plant medicines, we die every day, versions of ourselves are dying. So that's kind of in a nutshell of my scorpion years. And I'm so grateful for them, because I feel those of us who have seen the spectrum of it all, we really get grateful and we have a lot of compassion to what is happening in the world today.
Yeah. No, the ongoing conflicts and sort of separating yourself from it is more like a wise move nowadays, to be able to have more consciousness around it, because otherwise you get caught in the energy of it, and that can polarize you in a way that isn't actually very helpful. So yeah, it's a wise move to do that, and all power to you for recognizing that early. So what moment or experience made you realize your spiritual path was more about more than just about learning, it was about embodying?
Yeah, I think it was really in my 20s and early 30s when I started traveling and experiencing different ceremonies and plant medicine, that I was receiving just a lot of wisdom from different indigenous traditions, a lot of teachers. And it was about walking the path. And the walking the path meant that it's not just learning something like we go to school and learn. It's about really stepping into being that. So what version of ourselves is actually living those truths, right? So how do we live from the heart versus from our mind? How do we create spaces, safe containers for others to connect to themselves? So my embodiment process became not just being a tourist or a student, but really stepping into being a facilitator myself, a teacher, I call myself a galactic shaman. And we could talk about that, because at first it was a shaman, it wasn't galactic until the galactic part opened up. And now it's not something that I necessarily was seeking. It just happened that way. It was guidance. And I opened up to channeling and frequencies and bringing in different languages from different star systems. And these things were unfolding for me. It didn't happen overnight. I think when you step on this journey of reclamation of self, of understanding of self, of remembering your past lives and aspects of ourselves, and understanding we are much more than this, just this incarnation, this instance of ourselves. There's other bigger stories, I would say, of us. So there's like the little me here, and then there's like the bigger Diana self that has the higher self that has all the information. So like tapping into our own Akashic records and our own soul stream, and in many ways, right? Whether it's through ceremonies, hypnosis, meditations, however we do, however we journey. And that embodiment is also about not going away to just have those journeys, but taking those nuggets of truth we receive during those journeys and bringing them to here, into the body, into our movement, into our interactions on a daily basis as we move through the world. So we can go, let's say, to do grocery shopping and just kind of let the world be there, or we can be conscious creators of our reality. And that's what I talk about in the new book that I just published, Mastering Quantum Creation. So where we consciously create in the moments, or seeing who is in our reality game. So if we smile to the cashier and start a conversation, now we all of a sudden shift in for them too, their reality, their understanding of what's happening, and, you know, elevating them in frequency as well. So it's like taking all of those powerful nuggets of truth and frequencies and bringing it into here now. That's really the embodiment.
It's important to recognize that the process of actually capturing those nuggets and bringing them back, it at first it can seem challenging, but then once you open to it, then it becomes a part of like normal sort of experience, and it opens up more and more and more over time. Now, that you were talking before about ego death and spiritual purification as a part of that understanding of reality and creation, how important is that, do you think, to the process itself?
It's very important. I mean, ego death is part of where we headed from this place where we are in the suffering, right? Where we come into this reality game in this incarnation and we don't remember who we are. This is part of like the game of multidimensional amnesia, as I call it. Like, you know, we come in with different scripts that are running in the background, whether it's ancestral or karmic loops. There's different programs that we're carrying with us, but our soul, the software itself, has all the information. And so the part of the game here is that the ego is trying to control. The ego is that primordial brain. It's all about survival of the fetus. It believes in the suffering. But the soul is more kind of the elevated version of the free will versus the divine will, right? The divine will, it's free, it's liberated. So where do we find that balance? And so we come in and we forget how to love ourselves. Right? No one teaches us fully how to love ourselves. And so where I feel what we can talk about is ego death, that transition between loving yourself and not loving yourself, that's where when we step into fully embodying ourselves and loving ourselves, ego, it's not dying completely. It's always there. So it's not, but it's just finding the relationship and balance with the divine will. So free will is the ego and divine will, and then they start co-creating together. So it's never really separate, and that's the beauty of the experience of being in this body. It's individualization, because if you think about other star systems, other different dimensional realities and different civilizations, and I have a lot of experiences with them. So let's say they're telepathic. I'm going to talk about one of the groups I'm connected to, the Andromedans. They are very telepathic, very high consciousness beings. They're creators, but there's not as much individualization. Like, you don't have an ego per se. Everything you think, everyone thinks. It's kind of like the hive mind, right? And it's beautiful. It's very open. But at the same token, you're not able to have this type of individual expression that you can have while you're on Earth. So there's beauty and gift of being here. So when we say, you know, have an ego dying, just means that we're releasing a bit of this control of like, oh, I have to control the circumstances. Oh, I have to be in this sandbox and only this is going to happen. No, you're just opening your sandbox like, oh, I'm okay to play in the other sandboxes because there's other tools available. But I realize this is still me. This is still who I am. So I have a lot of clarity about who I am as a soul, who I am as an individual, and I have very unique soul signature that I carry because I collected these experiences through lifetimes on Earth and off Earth. But now I'm much more connected. I'm no longer trying to control the framework of what I can accept. I'm just open, and I'm saying yes to life, and I'm here to explore, and I'm here to listen to my heart. That is important, right? Fully listen to my heart. So it's dropping from this primordial kind of fear-based programming of being in so much in our mind and dropping into our heart. Because the heart is the connection to the universe. The heart is the feeling, right? So stepping from the logic into the feeling and then allowing this and surrender it becoming kind of part of a formula. And so that's why I see that evolution that on a spiritual path. It's so important. And when you step into that fully, like, holy fuck, yes, as I call it, like, yes, in my body, yes, in everything I do, and I trust the synchronicity that coming to me and the divine flow, then the universe starts co-creating with you. It's dancing with you. It's so easy to manifest. It's so easy to create. There's no more resistance in the field. So I feel the ego, what it does, when it's not fully open, it's constantly resistant, right? It's constantly creating these blocks in the field. And I can see them when I do my healings and my group work. I can see, you know, in people's fields, in their aura, on their body, whether the chakras are being disbalanced or, you know, just like these knots of energy. And it creates like energetic drainage, right? Like the people are not fully in their vitality. They're not fully thriving because there's always energy leaking. It's almost like the other metaphor that I love. It's like, you know how like you open your browser and if you didn't refresh your computer, you have all these tabs open. Like right now, I have probably 30 tabs open as I'm looking at you. Probably should close them.
We all do that.
Yes. And then it's just like, it's all that processing power that the computer is taken. And so it's like a little slower, right? And so we need to like come either refresh and reboot completely or start closing off our tabs. And so if we don't do that, like it just starts slowing down. Like we're not able to be here 300, like in full vitality, 100% as we can be. So yeah, so we need to close our tabs.
Yeah. So the ego death itself is like closing those tabs so you can actually have a bit of a reset. Then that way you're living more from the heart and open to experiences more authentically.
Correct. Yeah. It's all about radical authenticity. That's really when you know that you are moving towards the optimal, thriving kind of new earth reality that we all talk about, like the highest vibrational possible, because then the radical authenticity is when everything, like I said, is a yes. And then what you receive from that is what I call source overflow. So you overflowing. So it's like you have your cup, the one we were just talking about, the self-love cup, right? We have to fill that cup first before we can give to others. Because if your cup is empty, how can you give to others? And then when it starts overflowing, because you're just self-fulfilling yourself, you're loving yourself, you're doing all these practices, you're just constantly stepping into acceptance of self fully, 100%, then it starts overflowing into your saucer. And then from the saucer, you can start giving to others. The problem has been that a lot of people step into service work, but they themselves are not doing the work. They're not clearing out their tabs. They're not closing out the tabs. They're not doing shadow work. They just keep on escaping in some ways, but doing the saucer, but there's nothing in the saucer. It's kind of dry. So make sure to fill your cup first. Yeah.
Mm, of course. Yeah, wise words. You talk about mastering quantum creation. How would you describe quantum creation to somebody who is new to the concept?
I think first, let's break it down. What is quantum? So quantum is a word that's been used a lot. It's kind of a sexy word in quantum physics to understand the nature of reality through terminology, right? But what is quantum is really energy on a more subatomic way. This is just energy all around us. And so we have what's called waves and particles, right? So we are basically energy that broke down into a form and densified. So we are a particle ourselves, right? So there's all these particles. And so quantum means, so quantum field means that we have this energy all around us, and there's a field of information that is interconnected. So all these particles communicating, and it's like our brain. It's a neural network of information. And therefore, in this neural network of information, everything is available for us. But we need to step into this field to talk to it, because ourselves, like the things that we have in our life, like the house we have, the car, all these material things, materialization, started somewhere as an idea, right? A thought. And that thought had to come into a shape. So most likely like some sort of sacred geometry, had to feel a shape, and then eventually densified and materialized into this conscious reality in the way that we understand. This is a game, right? This is like a simulation, but somewhere someone is operating this game as well. So to create here, and I like the word creation versus manifestation and the difference between those two, because manifestation is almost, I'm assuming, it just happens. So we just, it's like outside of ourselves and it just happens. So we have no control over it. Creation means that no, actually, we are infinite creators. We create all the time. We are creative beings. And we've been creating Earth. We've been creating our reality. We've been creating together with other collectives what we're experiencing right now. So we constantly have a choice. Is it left? Is it right? How am I creating? What am I creating? Right? Constantly making those conscious decisions. So if this field of information, this ocean of information, these waves have everything in it, how do we co-create with it, right? So there is a formula that I write in my book about, and there's some key ingredients of making the cake. So one of them, for instance, is intention. Intention is so energy is available, but to concentrate the energy, you have to have an intention. It's like taking this energy and putting it into a smaller particle. So I like to give the metaphor of Diana, the goddess of hunting. So think of creation like hunting. So let's say, I've never hunted myself, but I'm assuming when you go into the forest, right, you have an animal running around and you want to catch that animal. So similarly for creation, let's say you want to buy a house and you have a vision of this particular house, how it looks like, you have some feelings about how you want to feel there, but it's available, right? All these houses are out there, but that one particular one, you got to hunt for it. And so how do you do that, right? So you have to have an intention. So it's almost like this goddess who, you know, has the bow and arrow. She has to put her intention on the tip of the arrow, and she has to go hunting. And when you go hunting, you know, you have to be really still. You have to be very coherent. Your mind and your heart has to be synchronized. So coherence is very important part of this. And you also have to have emotional mastery, meaning, and this is where it gets pinged because I have too many tabs open. So you have to be in a certain position to send this error into the universe, And so you have to be coherent, but you have to have an emotion. So if you, for instance, very chaotic, you're not having a good day, you're frustrated, most likely from that place, you're not going to be able to create. So you have to step into high vibration, right? You have to be either in joy or excitement about this creation that you're hunting for. And so you have to, you know, get into meditation or an excitement. You have to get into your position and then you, you know, release your error. And then you have to, the key energy here is surrender, meaning we send out the error into the universe, but we can't, this is our conversation about the ego, right? We have full trust and faith that this creation is happening. It already happened because it's already available in the field of information. But we are detaching from the outcome, meaning we have preferences, but we don't know how exactly it's going to happen. Because this is where we have to step back and allow the divine will or the quantum field to co-create with us. So if you hold your coherence strong and your full trust and surrender, and the field is going to be like, yeah, it's already here. Let me just, you know, bring it for you or co-create with you, and here it is. And when it happens, well, it actually usually happens quickly. I have an example. Actually, this weekend, I was a beautiful women's gathering, and I decided to experiment. And they had a raffle, and I usually participate in this raffle, but I kind of don't care about it, and I buy a few tickets, but then I just really kind of sit back and not engage in it. This year, I decided, oh, this is my opportunity to see how my creation works in play. So I bought some raffle tickets, same way, put them in every cup. And but this time I was like, universe, I'm here to receive, and I'm here to receive gifts. I'm here to, you know, bring them in. And I know your will. There's no other way. And I'm open for abundance, right? And I, you know, put my tickets out, and I'm like, yeah, at least I want at least 5 gifts. And I was like, part of me was like, Deanna, but okay, why not? And it was so fun, because during the raffle, I actually was having a conversation with someone. I had preference, right? I had the preference for 5 tickets to win something. And then as I started winning and they kept on calling my name, I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I, you know, it's working. But again, I wasn't controlling it. Like, I wasn't restricting how many.
You weren't attached to the outcome.
I wasn't attached to the outcome. And they kept, yeah. And I kept on winning and winning. They were like, Deanna, what's going on? And then they started calling me Miss Manifester, because they were like, Miss Deanna again. And then I got even free ticket for the event for next year and a bunch of little things. And even the next day, it kept on going. And that was really fun for me, because I was like, oh, this time I had intention. This time I put some energy into it. But like you said, CJ, I let it happen.
That's it. Well, the key there, I think, that's actually also a magical act. And in magical practice, if you let go of the result by not being attached to it, then your desire for the result doesn't push it away, because you're not gaslighting yourself thinking, I'm going to win that. You know what I mean? So that letting go is really key and a very powerful method in itself.
Yeah, letting go of the control of how and when.
Yes.
Well, you can with the when, no, I want to say I have put restrictions on when, like timelines, like I would say, within the 2 months, it's good to have parameters, right? And the parameters are helpful, but then you're not restricting exactly when, because again, universe doesn't stand time. So we
yes.
have to be fluid with it a bit too. Yeah.
Mm. How do you help others awaken to that innate ability to co-create with the quantum field?
Yeah, I'm doing a lot of meditations. In my book, I have different exercises, activations, and I feel it helps people when they, you know, listen to my meditation with the binaural beats, then they can drop into theta brainwave, and they kind of step into the field, and I channel sometimes light language with it. So, and then I do also Kundalini activation classes, again, creating safe containers where people can just relax, surrender, drop deeper. The deeper you drop, the more you like releasing all these limitations, right? And you just in the field, then you start feeling it. Then all of a sudden energy is kind of starts pulsing in your fingers. Then you start feeling some waves and, you know, things start happening in your body. And the more you release in resistance and opening your body to the flow of energy and you becoming with it, then it becomes real. Then it's an experience because we have what's called somatic intelligence in our body. We are energy. So we have this toroidal field that's around us and it's constantly moving and this energy running through our system. So Kundalini is essentially, everyone talks about Kundalini is just coming from your root up into your third eye, but actually, based on my experiences and activating many people to Kundalini energy or light language, it's really cyclical. It just moves through your body all the time. It's not just stopping in the third eye. It keeps on going and it goes through all our circuitries. And so for me, it's just really back to like reminding people that they are this amazing creative beings and we are this energy and we're not separate from it. We are quantum ourselves. So, and quantum also means we are light. So right now, astrologically, celestially, we're moving through the photonic belt. So there's a lot of light particles that we're receiving from the galaxy. We're moving closer to the central sun, which is to basically black hole, the center of the galaxy, more and more light coming our way. Also, we're receiving a lot of light right now from our sun. Every time there's a solar flash, there's a lot of, you know, people experiencing geomagnetic storms and sometimes experience different symptoms and they call it ascension symptoms. But all that means is that we've been retuned. Our bodies are very dense. So like a spirit is ready for all of it, all that light sometimes, but the body is still calibrating. So it's always the best analogy is to understand we are divine instrument. We are like the musical instrument. So, and we are geometry. If our body is out of tune or just not in alignment, it has hard time receiving so much light. It's just not used to it. So each time we get an upgraded, our sacred geometry, our instrument is getting more tuned to it. So a lot of people come to me for that too. They come for recalibrations. I do what's called crystalline soul healing and quantum attunement where I do a channel session with people and I recalibrate the energy field. So that means going through their chakra system, through their geometry. And it actually runs a program through the whole soul system. Means like if there are any imprints or cords in other lifetimes, like it just clears energy. It's a clearing. Because before you activate anything or able to hold so much light, you need to clear the space. You have to create more space for it. And so I think that's what's happening for us. We are stepping into evolution of ourselves to be able to hold as much light as we can and align our bodies, our energy fields to this light.
Yeah, I think this is all a part of the natural process of being. And we all, as I say, punch the ticket to be here and live in this experience now. And it's a big time of change and, you know, great revealing for everyone. So we should just embrace it, I think. Now, you actually weave together galactic channeling, shamanism, and source light language in your work. How do these modalities complement each other?
So my story was that I was trained through shamanic practices and they're very like earth-based rituals. And one of my last ceremonies with ayahuasca medicine, she was actually the one who was like, you kind of graduated, it's time for you to stop coming back and it's time to go galactic. And I was like, what is galactic? I didn't quite understand. But it was clear that it was time for me to like integrate and just, you know, experience something else. And a year or so later, I had an experience where we were just hiking in these beautiful mountains and my friend encouraged me to sing. And that was one, you know, my throat was still I was carrying that limiting belief, you know, from Soviet Union. Oh, you're not a good singer. You can't sing. You can't, you know, your voice is not strong enough. And our voices, especially for women, have been suppressed for eons. And so reclamation of the voice is a whole thing. So we were in this really beautiful, magical place. And we sat down on the rocks and I started meditating and humming. And then I saw these beautiful kind of golden codes, I would say, that were like, let us through, let us through. So I had to surrender. And this incredible sounds came out of me. Oh my God, CJ was like, who is that? Like, I was observing myself singing like an opera. Incredible sounds that was like traveling through the valley. I was like, who is singing this? This is not me. And there was just different tones, you know, different overtones and harmonics. And so this opened a whole new chapter in my life to start connecting to what I know now is called light language, or I was shown in ceremony, it's for it to call it source language. And I have Source Language Institute because it's not just light. It's also sound. It's also consciousness. So it's different way the source expresses itself, but it's all frequency. And sound is a frequency. And so we come from different star systems and our soul travel in different star systems. And there's language in all these systems, different frequencies. There's language on Earth. You know, mushrooms have a language, trees have a language, and fairies, dragons, all these other elements in our realms that we can't perceive with our eyes, but they're all available and they're there. So it's how we tune to them and become this beautiful divine instrument to bring us these frequencies here through our channel. And the channel is a higher self. It's not like a mediumship where you tune to an entity and you channel that. This is all through us. And our higher self is discerning these frequencies and has different ways of channeling them and bringing them into sound. So shamanism had a really great foundation for me. And then bringing in the galactics, now I'm understanding how to work with these frequencies. And what do shamans do? Shamans transmute energies. Shamans, like we were just talking about, clearing the field, clearing the blocks, clearing things. They really are comfortable in moving between realms, between dimensions, understanding how these different areas navigate. And so I just became, if before I was like underworld, upper world, kind of just, you know, just few worlds, now the galactic aspect of it, galactic is just another world, understanding now the different star systems and understanding the soul and how the soul has moved through these different star systems and the frequencies it carries and the languages. So now help people to connect to their language. And the language can be more than just one. People think, oh, it's just one. No, actually, it starts with the one your soul remembers the most. For some people, when I activate and help them, it might be from Atlantis, could be Atlantean language, it could be Lemurian language, it could be the dragon, it could be the fairy, whatever they're so most connected to, but they also are the languages we all have. And really, because we are more than 25 codes of DNA, so we are like an orchestra, really, of different star systems that created this body. So if we really allow ourselves, we can actually channel different frequencies from different systems. And why is it important? Because it's incredible what the sound can do. You know, I've been a Reiki master since I was 20 years old. And, you know, I've done hands-on healing, distance healing, all kinds of healing that like within the parameter of Reiki. But when this opened up for me, not only I write code, I'm not using Reiki symbols, I'm writing symbols all the time and they change real time, but I'm also able to move energy in a way that I've never been able to move before because I'm writing code and I'm seeing code and with my sound, it's organic, it's channeled. But this is, again, back to the ego. The ego steps aside and it's just being in the transmission. And then the language, you know, tunes to the group, to the person, whatever is needed in that moment. And it's incredible. Sometimes even for me, let's say I'm in the field I'm doing my workshop like in person, online, but in person is most fun. And I'm on one side of the room and, you know, I'm making sounds, but I'm like, let's say I'm directing it towards one person and I'm seeing how the person reacts. I'm on a completely different side of the room and this person starts like, you know, moving and wiggling and they're reacting to it. And it's just always, this prodigy is always in awe. Like, wow, how does this happen? It is. And then, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. When you step into that stream, the things that just happen are quite amazing, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's always like, wow. I love being in that flow. Wow. Because it never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah. Cool. You mentioned that meeting your twin flame amplified your mission. How has this partnership influenced your work and your message?
Yeah. One day I think I'm going to write a book about twin flames. I think it's hurt. I think it's coming. It's somewhere percolating in the energy field. And like everything else, takes time to bring it into this reality. The journey of the twin flames is fascinating one. I actually had a Akashic reading done by Debbie Solaris, and we went back to the origin of my relationship with my husband. So he's my twin flame, and we've been together. Our anniversary is this weekend. We got married at Burning Man 2016. So it's been 9 years. Well, been together for 10 years, so a decade. You know, in my journey, you know, I got to do so many things and collect so many tools and meet so many teachers, but I came to this moment, I think in 2015, I had my kid, a broken relationship, released that relationship. And I realized, I was like, whoa, I kept on attracting karmic relationships. And the karmic relationships are heavy. There's always lessons to be learned. And I do so many past life regressions, quantum healing regressions with people. And I can see like every time there's a karmic relationship, there's things to process and work through. And sometimes, you know, it can be challenging in this lifetime to always resolve it. And I was like, well, I kind of surpassed the teachers in my life and I needed that partner where we can grow together and consciously evolve and mirror each other, right? And I think that was my first time that Mastering Quantum Creation Formula worked, because I put in the field, I did all the steps, and I met him within a month. So it happened quite quickly because I put it into the field, and I think both of us were ready for it. I recognize, and I knew I'm going to recognize him right away, and I recognized him the first 5 minutes. Also, it helped, like we were coming out of Burning Man, we were on the same flight the next day, but it was just the resonance and all these signs, like you just know in the moment, 5 minutes, and I already had a knowing. And I remember back then, my friends were like, are you crazy? Like, you're a single mom in New York, you really think this is going to happen for you? But I'm like, yes, anything is possible. I didn't know it was called twin flames, to be honest. I just knew what I want to feel like and what kind of relationship I want to be in. But my understanding of twin flames now is this relationship is very different than any other relationships. It's a lot of work, doesn't have the karmic density, but there's still past lives together in some shape or form, not on Earth, that we still had to work through. So some people say it's the same soul that's split apart. I don't quite believe that. I believe it's maybe not the soul, but oversoul. So it's like bigger aspect of the source that has chosen to manifest into masculine and feminine and chose the darkness and the light and played these different roles and to understand these different realities through the darkness and the light and how to integrate them in this universal construct. So, because my husband has chosen the darkness and he has a lot of dark lifetimes that he has experienced, and we also played very big roles in the galactic saga. I write it in my book, the Draco and the Lyran systems and that whole first invasion, like when we think of Star Wars, right, the Empire versus the Jedi, like all of that, we've lived through that and we have all the memories now of it. And so when we met, all these memories started surfacing up. It was just like so much evolution has happened. And it's been a beautiful journey because not only we took all this wisdom to the next level, we started creating technology. And today, I have to say, we have a lot of quantum technology we've developed that he's like the pioneer in quantum, is now working with some pretty big companies that creating some evolutionary med beds and things like that. So he's really stepping into that field. We have a lot of things we're offering through our Etsy shops that has to do with quantum, because we have quantum generators. We figured out, we remembered our priesthood. We remembered our Atlantean times, and we remembered how we did it on Earth. And so we now just, you know, bringing all of that wisdom into real, like tangible, because we really believed that it's not just about talking about it, but being the bridge between science and esoterics, and how can we move forward with that and help others. And so it's been a really beautiful, powerful partnership. And so much, you know, we joke and we say, like, you know, we have an anniversary. I'm like, this decade has been not a decade. It's really been eons and eons of learning, of transformation. And it's something that when we got married at Burning Man, we were calling in for others to have as well, if they're ready for it.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, I met my twin flame nearly 5 years ago now. And we got married as well. And it was just, the relationship's like nothing else. Totally, totally different to every other
one. Yeah, it's really hard
to put in
words. If you were CJ to describe what it feels like, how would you describe it?
It feels like we flow in the same direction without much resistance.
Mm. I love that. That's such a beautiful way to describe it.
Yeah, yeah. And both of us balance the feminine and the masculine within that as well. So it works really well.
I do want to mention, though, that is divine union, what you have in. You have in already, like, you locked in. You both chose to be together. And so those resistances are no longer in your relationship. Typical, and we are as well. So yes, we're working through like stuff in the 3D reality, you know, and those are usually the most challenges for us. The 5D is very different, much easier. But what I'm observing, you know, in many one twin flame relationships, and there is, of course, what people talk about, the chaser and the runner. And that just means that the partners are just not ready for this type of relationship, and it just brings up a lot of things in them. Because again, if you have a mirror in front of you and it's just like vibrating for you to see all the things you don't want to see and you don't want to work through, it might be overwhelming. And initially it is an overwhelming experience unless you choose this and you want to embody that. So there's sometimes one that really wants it and the other one is like, no, this is not for me, no thank you. So unless both choose to lock in, what I call lock in is like fully trust their power across space and time to be together in this reality and work together and, like you said, flow together without resistance, then it's divine union. And that's really, I feel, the true beauty of the twin flame relationship. But not all twin flames meant to be together, and sometimes they're just meant to be catalysts for each other, for awakening. And also I want to mention, and many don't say that, there's more than one twin flame. There's at least 6 potentialities, not all of them incarnated on Earth, but the way the monad souls come into Earth, there's sometimes more than one. So sometimes people are like, oh, twin flame is only one. No, actually, sometimes there's near twins. So it gets a little more complex. I'm still figuring it out. That's why I said one day I'll write a book when I'm ready for it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It sounds like it's coming through. Now, for someone who's actually feeling overwhelmed by spiritual awakening or multidimensional experiences, do you have any grounding practices that you recommend?
I think most powerful practices is really to be in your body. So starting your day by having practice of breath work, I think is really great, because it really charges your cells and you really tap into all the organ systems. I love to do my breath work outside, you know, 8 a.m. when the sun is like right in front of you. And then you can also absorb all, like either do sun gaze and then just close your eyes and absorb all that light all those light particles as well. So you start supercharging your cells, but also get an attuned to that. And meanwhile, having your feet barefoot on the ground. So learning how to be grounded on the ground barefoot is so important, like taking your plastic shoes off and like really anchoring to earth. I also do meditations where I have people use sacred geometry, for instance, octahedron, which is like the diamond. And I find the diamond is really powerful shape to put yourself in. So I have this whole meditation where people go into the diamond or the octahedron, and that helps people really anchor and stabilize the field in this reality. So being kind of in the center of it, like to the core of the Mother Earth and to the galactic sun. So that's another one. I love hugging trees. I feel the trees are really beautiful grounding vehicles for our reality. They have their own interconnected, beautiful mycelium network. And every time I connect to a tree, I feel very grounded to earth. And so, yeah, the more you can be here with the mother, and the mother, I mean Mother Earth, and understand why you chose to be here, like what's your soul mission, but also what are your practices to be with her, and understand that she's too is evolving. She's a biological being, but she has a soul too. And so a lot of my work is actually earth grid work. So I go to different sites around the world and I do an acupuncture from Mother Earth, so to speak. Like I activate the area, clear it, I activate, and I leave some devices that help her to, you know, be also connected. So there's a lot of that relationship with the earth we need to establish locally. Like, you know, you can find your lake or pond and connect to the water, connect to the trees. So little practices like that really start helping you the more you're in nature to realize why you're here. Because I think a lot of it, the ungroundiness of it, is because our fields are shaky. Like we're not walking on earth, right? We're not connected. We're living in this suburban houses with EMF around us. So there's all this noise, electrical noise, 5G tower noise, all this noise that's not letting our bodies to be connected. So, you know, if you go outside and you start gardening or just lying on the grass, it's just amazing how that changes your biofield as well. So, you know, this whole summer, because I know you in Australia, but for us, it's the end of the summer. It's a bittersweet. And this whole summer, I've been a lot out upstate New York, different campaign gatherings and other gatherings, like sleeping in the tent, you know, being outside in nature, disconnected from my device because there's no reception there for 3-4 days. And it's just so incredible. The more you're off the grid, the more you like one with the flow of it all. And you feel very grounded, like you're feeling joy. And then when you come back into the city, you start feeling the difference and like the jitteriness in your field. So if you know, like, you know, these are my practices throughout the day to come back to that state, so just keep on doing them, because that's a muscle. We have to keep on training that muscle to be present. What is groundedness? To be present here now.
One of the things people find when they're starting to go on their spiritual journey is they have trouble discerning between their own inner guidance and external energetic transmissions. Do you have any suggestions for people so they can do that themselves?
So the question is how to discern between inner guidance?
Inner guidance to transmissions that are coming in.
I think they intertwine. I don't see them as separate. So the more you start stepping and embodying your higher self, and it's not like when we talk about ascension, there's always an assumption that we ascend somewhere. It's really descension, meaning those higher chakras, they're all coming down into this body. So the more, you know, we talk about the 7 chakra system in our body, the more you start tapping into whatever higher level of consciousness, from my experience, the more those other higher chakras are available for you too, the more knowledge and information is available, because then it becomes your reality. And so then transmissions are not outside of you. They are part of your inner guidance. It's like your higher self conversations you're having on a daily basis all the time, right? It's like, okay, what's my next thing? And really discerning and listening, is this information coming from my higher self, from me? And then is it for me? Or like if I'm doing a channeling on Zoom for a group, then my intention is different. Then I'm just becoming an instrument to bring that transmission for others. So it's really an intention. Intention sets the difference. Am I just having a dialogue in light language and it's just a dialogue? Or I'm actually doing an activation now. And if I'm doing an activation, and we can do that too if we have time, then my intention is activation. So the energy that will come through me is going to be a transmission. It's going to be something that will activate others versus just having a dialogue. So I think that's really the difference. Knowing that we consciously constantly choose the type of information that we bring it in, and then how do we connect to it, and what's the purpose of that information?
Yeah, it's a good way to discern. Now, you were saying there that you'd like to offer an activation.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, if you don't mind.
Sure. So yeah, we're just going to do a heart opening. I feel that's what's being called right now. And so if you take it, yeah. And maybe we'll do a quick stabilization of the field, as I was mentioning, because you were asking about grounding, because a lot of information is happening right now. So I invite you all to close your eyes, taking a deep breath into your heart and exhaling out. Another deep breath and just scanning your systems right now, your emotional body system, just seeing if there's anything that is in resistance, is not serving you at this time. And you just collect that energy and exhale it out with your mouth open. Beautiful. And I'd like you to imagine as though a tunnel of light is opening under your feet. And this tunnel of light looks like a triangle, like a pyramid going down, down through the rocks, through the soil, all the way to the plasmatic core of Mother Earth. I'm taking this moment to connect to the mother. And just feeling the nourishment and support and the love of the mother. Taking another deep breath now back into your heart, and now looking up in the sky, and imagine as though another pyramid of light is stretching out up and up through the different star systems, all the way to the galactic core, to the central sun, to the black hole of our galaxy. And just seeing yourself now in this beautiful diamond octahedron light, and you stand in the middle of it, fully supported, as above, so below, as below, so above. Anchored and integrated in all the different realms and dimensions, bringing all the aspects of yourself here now, and seeing this beautiful octahedron of light filling up with light now, this beautiful rainbow light. And as we breathe into our heart, I'm going to bring in the transmission to bring us into the quantum field, into the heart portal. Ну а не а ту что ну а кья нар что ракья не а ну 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 а ар что умбу а кья ту что умба я я умбу а кья не а на я на я на я на ушу куана тя ушту умба я су тун тя кья на что а я умбу а я а кья та на Ушту ая, 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 ну, нурнуа. Ишака, имана, туштумая, кия, туштуа. breathing that in and expanding your heart like a sun. Urtumbaya, shtia tumbaya ki. Seeing this beautiful golden light. Urtushtimbaya. Now radiating into every cell of your body, connecting every organ. Ushtumbaikiano tuaya nanari, remembering ushtuaikina. You are this light. Ushtuaima naturitiana. You have access, urtumbashtia, to the quantum field of information. Umbaikania tua nantia nana nashtuha. And you can invoke Ishtana Ia and call in your guides, your support teams, your star beings, Ushtumbaya, to create Untua, what is in the highest alignment, Ushtumbaya Kia, for your soul, Urtumbaya. Now a deep breath in, integrating the message, Urtumbaya Kia Na. And you can put your hands on your belly, on your womb, Urtuma. And just feel expansion now there as well. So one hand on your heart, one on your belly. Just feel that connection. And feeling in the portal of creation, the womb, in your sacral. This beautiful orange golden light, and creating more space, breathing into there, connecting between your heart and the womb of creation. Seeding it with your intentions, and expanding it, creating new spaces, new sacred geometries for what you're calling in. And again, connecting to Mother Earth and galactic stars, and just being fully anchored, supported, anchoring, integrating. Urtumbaya kia nashumaya kia tuasha anutu umaya ishana ishaha iana. And so it is, and so it is, and so it is. Thank you.
Thank you. And so it is. Wow.
Yeah. What you can say in light language is just so expensive. I can sometimes, it's like not enough language in English or any others that I know to express the vastness and like the frequency of it all. And that's why I'm so excited and passionate about having others activate to this expression, because it feels so limitless. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely felt that then. Thank you. Now, I've got to ask this question. When people actually get to the point of discovering their divine or cosmic connection, some would actually become skeptical about reclaiming that cosmic identity. How would you encourage them to do that?
Well, skepticism, again, comes from fear vibration, right? They just don't know what they don't know. Everything is on the other side of fear, into the unknown, right? So it's kind of like, they're just not understanding yet. And it's funny because, like, even in my book, this one woman who is in her 70s reached out to me. She's like, I loved your book, but that chapter on the galactic origins was over my head. And I was like, and that's okay. I told her, I was like, I'm inviting you into possibility. You can just read it as a sci-fi novel, or you can, you know, whatever resonates. And I write different starseed, you know, qualities. I just created actually a quiz on my website. So if you go to dianadivine.com/starseed, you can take a quiz that based on, you know, 12 questions or 11 questions kind of just shows you which possibly starseed you are. But there's certain qualities that we carry and we have that might be more dominant than others that are related to that particular galactic frequency. Again, generalized. We have to remember the soul has moved through sometimes different systems and it collected from different experiences. It's like I lived in the United States for 30 years, but I also lived in Middle East and this and that. So each each place I like, you know, absorb some information qualities, but also I come with some intrinsic, my own framework. So all of that is just, I'm just encouraging you to be curious and open, and curiosity is really what leads to all of it. It's just follow the breadcrumbs. That's it.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I did the test myself. I'm a Syrian. So
there we go. That makes sense.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. 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 So, Deanna, we've come to the end of the podcast. How would people find you and your books?
Yeah, DeannaDivine.com or DianaDivine.com. My book is available right there. My Oracle deck as well. That kind of came together with the book. Some quizzes there and some offerings. And if you want to work one-on-one, there's, reach out either through Calendly. I have some offerings. Or if you're not sure, you can even book with me half an hour free soul guidance session and just have a conversation, meet me, and I can advise on some of the ways you can move forward and where I can help you. I'm here just to like facilitate and help. But at the end of the day, you already know everything. We're just here helping each other to re-remember. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, we're just taking the blinkers off. So. Thank you so much, Deanna. I've appreciated all that you've shared here today.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll share all the links in the notes. And thank you, everyone, for being open, for receiving. As you receive light language, drink a lot of water. Take the time to integrate as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was awesome. All right. I'll just say goodbye to the listeners.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks again to Deanna for coming on and explaining your wisdom, which has come from a life of intense change and moving through that change consciously. If you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to learn more, then go to Deanna's website, actually, links below. And if you've enjoyed today's show and you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe. That'd be really appreciated. And if you're on a podcast app, give me 5 stars and say something nice. And if you don't want to do that, just share this episode to a friend that you think will enjoy it and gain great benefit. All right. Thank you so much for listening and for watching. Until next episode, it's bye for now.
Remember to like and subscribe. Full videos below.